Hello everyone, herb lovers, sustainable health seekers, herbal medicine fans. Welcome back to Herbcast, our podcast from Herbal Reality. In every episode, we explore how traditional wisdom and up-to-date herbal science can meet the needs of the hour and support a sustainable and effective approach to our health. As you know, herbs have nourished human health for thousands of years, and whilst they hold so much potential to meet today's numerous health challenges, there are still so many questions to be answered. And we're delighted to have you with us today as we continue to deepen our understanding together. So get comfy, pour yourself a cup of herbal tea, and let's begin. Today's episode is hosted by Marion McConaughey.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Herbcast. Today I'm going to be talking about evidence, tradition and empirical knowledge about herbs for women's health with Hananya Bryce-Dietzma. Hananya is a fellow of the National Institute of Medical Herbalists. She's been in practice as a herbalist for over 35 years. In 1995, she helped pioneer Britain's first BSc degree in herbal medicine at Middlesex University, which is where we first met when I was training. Hananya was my clinic supervisor. And she is also a co-founder and clinical director at the Heartwood Professional Course, as well as co-writing two books in the series Herbal Medicine in Treating Gynecological Conditions. So Hananya, welcome. Really lovely to speak to you today.
Oh, thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Great. So talking about women's health, it's a really interesting time for women's health at the moment. It's a bit of a hot topic, and we've finally got acknowledgement from researchers and physicians that lots more research generally is needed. Which areas of women's health do you think are best researched at the moment?
Well, I think probably the menopause is pretty well researched, and then we have all these controversial things coming out anyway, isn't it, with the whole Women's Health Initiative studies, where one time we said no HRT and now it says, oh, it wasn't actually that bad, so it's okay to use HRT. So very confusing messages coming out there, but there's some interesting background going on, although it's interesting with a lot of that research how many gaps there are all the time in really understanding what is going on. I think PCOS is quite well researched, which is interesting because when I started clinical training, we had something we called Stein-Lieventhal syndrome, and that's the only thing we knew about polycystic ovaries. It was more really the hairy beard syndrome type of thing, but we didn't know so much about PCOS. But that has really gone forward in the research, where we understand a little bit more. But as usual, with all those conditions, we have so many gaps where we don't quite understand, but we do understand a lot more. Bit less on fibroids. I mean, all those conditions are well researched, but every time there's such a lot of information that we also don't know about. I mean, it's interesting to have this link between fibroids and hypertension. And then this speculation, is there something with the microcirculation that has something to do in the whole background, which is really interesting to think about, because in many cases, the more research in those particular conditions helps us to think about what particular herbs might have a good application here. And also sometimes might explain, is that why a particular herb was very useful for a particular condition?
Yeah. I didn't know that there was a link between fibroids and hypertension. Actually, that is really interesting.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of vascular. I mean, vascular does seem to come up in quite a lot of conditions, doesn't it?
Yeah. There are two things, isn't it? Because the vascular things are now really, you know, the whole endothelial lining, blah, blah, blah. And then the other thing where every time that pops its head is, the microbiome. Yes. By the way, the microbiome, we talk about mental health, about obviously bowel health. And then, gynae, microbiome is important too. We probably find that it's important in absolutely everything. And in many ways, as herbalists, that makes totally sense. And I feel a little bit like, we knew that already. But actually, we get a lot of confirmation in the research that says, there is a link here with the microbiome and the different conditions.
Yeah, we've always focused on the gut, haven't we? I mean, the trouble with the microbiome is it's insanely complicated. It's like multiple different organisms all interacting together in confusing ways. It's quite hard to unpick it all.
Yeah. So it's the human body, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, that is true. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of research generally for women's health. How about herbs? Which herbs do you think are best researched?
I think that's an interesting question. Probably, the black cohosh. I always get confused now which name to use, Actaea or Simus fuca. I knew it as Simus fuca. Nowadays it's Actaea.
Me too.
That one has been a long time researched. I mean, already in 1961, Germany had about 37 different research projects on just black cohosh, and that's quite early on. And comparing it often with HRT to see how effective it was. But, you know, that hasn't stopped that research in black cohosh. I mean, more research is coming out now.
So were there actually comparison studies with HRT and black cohosh back in the
60s? Definitely very early on. There were a lot of different studies related to that.
Mm.
It might be that nowadays they say, oh, yeah, but now the way we look at trials, you know, it wasn't as, you know, super whatever.
Yeah.
But that still doesn't, I mean, the research has, a lot of that research is done. So it's interesting, it gave indications that, I mean, a lot of those trials will say it was as effective as taking estrogen and so on. So there's interesting research related with that. And there's some interesting research with black cohosh done with women in the menopause, where we're trying to figure out what on earth is black cohosh doing. And if we think about the things that we don't know, I mean, we know something where it is effective on, but do we really understand how black cohosh is working? We know that it's not just one constituent, but as herbalist, you need at least three of the different triterpenes in there to make it effective.
Mm.
I would argue probably more than that to make it, you know, the whole package is what we needed. But that's interesting where they started to figure out, okay, does it sit on estrogen receptors or not? How does it work? And I think we got as far as saying, well, it doesn't actually sit on any of the estrogen receptors. And then we have to start thinking about how, you know, why does it work? They think it might be dopaminergic effect, which might be slightly like how Vitex works.
Yeah.
So very interesting research coming out there. But also what is interesting with the research with black cohosh, they look at how it works in menopausal women and the effect on the pH in the the vagina. They look at the cell thickness in the vagina and saying it increases lubrication. They have looked at the bone turnover, an effect on the osteoblast it has, and then they look about mental health, they look at the hot flushes, they're trying to look at the hormone. There's so much details there that actually comes from studies in humans as opposed to in a little dish or in a rat, but actually human research that suggests, yes, it's doing something really positive for menopausal women, and it's not sitting on the estrogen receptors. So there we start thinking, oh, what's going on there? So there's some really interesting things going on there. I think the other one that is reasonably well researched is Acmus castus.
Yeah.
Again, at the beginning, there's a lot of the hormonal herbs are sort of misunderstood because we sort of I suppose people get a little bit lazy. It has an effect on the hormones, and therefore that's why I would use it. Whereas actually we do understand a lot more about Acmus castus, how it works. In the beginning it was thought it is a progesteronic herb. Now they realize it's not a direct progesteronic herb, it's an indirect progesteronic herb. So there's a lot of interesting detail with Acmus castus. And then going slightly sideways, a lot of research has been done on soya, where we talk about isoflavones. And then it's sometimes, then you get sort of in that mess of the isolated isoflavones or extracted from red clover, which is not quite the same, or they mix it all up. And then they're very much confusing there. But there's so much research related to soya. itself, which I think is really interesting because people sort of get a little bit panicky about herbs that are estrogenic because, oh, if there's breast cancer or prostate cancer, would it therefore encourage the growth of those ones? Now, just to give a hint, no, it doesn't. But that's interesting to have that detail of research there to also be reassuring about that those herbs might not only be not having a negative effect, but actually might have a positive impact on some of those conditions too.
Yeah, so I've had more than one patient I've had to reassure about soya and said, yeah, no, you really, it's going to be helpful. You should be having it, not avoiding it.
Yeah, and the internet doesn't really help there, does it? Because there's so much fake news, and I suppose the whole fake news, so much fake promises and fake news with sometimes the herbal medicine field. It's quite a nightmare, really.
I think part of the problem is that information never goes anywhere once it's on the internet. So you've got lots of stuff that's been absolutely disproven years and years ago, but it's still up there as if it's fresh, you know. Yeah. And if people aren't looking at the dates that something's been put up there, then they may well be getting really out of date information, and science and knowledge and herbal medicine all move on, you know, continuously. So.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I think a lot of books reproduce old information as well, which I think is really then hard to, you know, I'm teaching at Hartwood, a professional course of herbal medicine. And it's really, really sort of saying to the students, no, actually, you need to look at the original information where this might have come from. But, you know, books will sort of happily sort of putting a long list of what a herb might be doing when it's not necessarily always true, and sort of side effects and contraindications, which people get very confused about as well, because a lot of that's related to in vitro research and isolated constituents and has nothing to do with the actual herb as such.
Yeah. It is interesting. I mean, going back to the, I know we've moved on a little bit, but going back to the black cohosh, it's really interesting that you say that there's sort of no evidence of black cohosh activating estrogen receptors with that kind of profile of different benefits, which look so strongly connected to an estrogenic effect. Like, what could be going on? You know, is there any other explanation for why it might be having that positive effect that looks so estrogenic?
Because all the effects seems to be like if you're taking estrogen, isn't it? It's very confusing about a particular herb. Now, some people say it might be because it has dopaminergic effect, and being dopaminergic might explain why it could have anti-cancerous effect, which isn't, you know, it's not just safe, but possibly anti-cancerous effect. They also say it's... some of the research suggests it sits on some of the nerve transmitters, and therefore has an effect on a lot of things related there. One person suggests that, oh, perhaps there's another estrogen receptor we don't know about, but that's not come out yet. I haven't heard anything more. And then, I mean, there's so many different actions to Simus fuca as a whole herb, because we know traditionally it's also used as an anti-inflammatory, and we know inflammation is part of so many different pictures of health.
Yeah.
Mental health is so big an impact as well, so the neurotransmitters might be helpful too. Then being dopaminergic suggested lowers prolactin levels, and that high prolactin levels might be related to a lot of other symptoms related to, which often gets higher with stress. So those are the kind of hints that people are looking at.
Mm.
So, but what we definitely know, it doesn't sit to the receptors alpha and beta, which is the ones that we know about.
Yeah. It's interesting. I guess when we practice, we kind of make use of empirical knowledge, our experience, learning from other herbalists, reading books, and as well as the kind of published research. But I guess, does it really matter where your knowledge comes from if your end result is the same?
That's it. Yes. Yeah. Well, I suppose we as herbalists are curious, you said. Yeah.
Yeah.
We want to find out and sort of, but yeah. Why or what? What is also interesting with black car, which I find really fascinating in the UK, we tend to use quite high dosage of it. Mm. And if you look at any of those clinical trials with black car, and there are loads, we use those all use much lower quantities of black cohosh. And we always do say, oh, but be careful with black cohosh. It might lead to frontal headache. It might lead to nausea, which sort of is the case. Yeah, if you're going to use high doses, that is more likely to happen. But in the safe dosages that have been used in the trials, none of those tend to come up. But I've definitely noticed people that took a good swig of black cohosh and got a frontal headache and nausea of it, and dosage is probably another interesting effect. It was actually a trial. Oh, sorry, I'm totally sidetracked here.
It's a good sidetrack. Keep going.
It was a trial comparing the dosage of 40, 80, and 127 milligrams of something, and actually found that 100, the higher doses did not give any more benefit than the lower dosage. Yeah. So that's an interesting one as well. More is not always better.
No, which is great because that's either cheaper for our patients or, yes. or we can add more herbs into the mix.
Exactly, yes.
I did read that in your book and have started using lower doses of black cohosh since reading that. So it's good. Having an impact.
Hi there, Sebastian here. If you're enjoying this episode, you might like to know there are plenty more herbal insights on our website. Come and discover more on the science, tradition, and practical use of herbs at herbalreality.com. You can check out our special features such as our herb library, where we have monographs written by clinical practitioners on over 200 herbs used in Western, Chinese, and Ayurveda herbal traditions. We cover the traditional use, modern research, how practitioners use the herbs in clinic, any quality and safety data, as well as a sustainability listening, so you know how to safely use the best quality herbs in a way that protects your health and that of the planet. You can search herbs by the action, grouping them all together, say for immunity or by energetic function, all the immunological, heating or cooling herbs in one place. You can also sign up for our newsletter for plant-powered wisdom delivered straight to your inbox for the most up-to-date information. Right, let's get back to today's conversation.
Where do you think are the gaps that you would want to know more about with any of these herbs or with any particular women's health problems specifically?
Oh, where to start? I think there's some... It's sort of the amounts of herbs that are used in women's health are so many, and the majority are not really that well researched. So if we look at Alchemilla, Achillea, Leonoris, some of the ones I sort of write them, if I can sort of say about it in the second book, I'm writing more about herbs that have been less well researched. Doesn't mean they're any less effective, but they're very poorly researched. Those herbs have a fascinating... if you look at the traditional books and read on it, they seem to have a wide range of application. Raspberry leaf is another interesting example that most people know for using for pregnancy. Mm. We have a little bit of research there, but usually being used in very low dosage, and it looks all very encouraging. But there's just little hints of it that suggest, hang on a minute, these herbs... It makes sense why those were used in a traditional way, but we have only little glimpses of it. They're more preclinical research, so much more in vitro, which is interesting. But to be honest, you know, we don't inject the herbs to get direct contact with whatever tissue we wanted to have it with. Mm. And obviously the whole animal research, again, that doesn't apply automatically to the human body. So, yeah, it's sort of the Achillea, Leonoris, Alchemilla. I'm trying to think of the other ones. Raspberry leaf.
Yeah, you've got Angelica sinensis in there as well.
Oh, yeah. Angelica sinensis, it sort of feels like we should know a lot more about it, but actually clinical trials, they're very little on with it on its own. Now, in many ways, herbalists don't work with herbs on their own, but I do find, like, if you look at the examples we looked at in Black Cowash, actually the what we find out by using it in specific people and looking at some of the markers, the blood test, and what's happening with the pH, etc., in particular age of woman, really gives a very interesting insight to understand the herb. And Angelica sinensis is, you know, was more researched in the 1930s. There are some clinical trials there, but very little with it on its own later on. So it's not terribly well researched. And it's not an hormonal herb, which most people think it is.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised to see that in the book as a non-hormonal one. So I guess you think if you're using it in a hormonal condition primarily, then it's going to be working on hormones. But I think one of the things that lots of those herbs have is that they've been used traditionally for multiple different things. Yeah. You know, they've been one of those ambidextrous herbs that's just used a lot. And I guess maybe that's why it hasn't been researched so much, because people are confused where they should be researching it. You know, what sort of research is appropriate for a herb like Achillea, which has got so many different uses.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Angelica has been trying to figure out, has it hormonal effect? We know as much, at least it doesn't have that, but it still makes sense to use it in gynae conditions, because gynae conditions aren't just about hormones. Yeah. I mean, the whole body is involved. The whole idea of congestion in the pelvic area, and then Angelica sinensis is also seen as a female tonic. So it has a lot of positive things that are definitely worthwhile looking into the use of the herb, but it's not a hormonal herb.
Interesting. And I guess it's really hard to find research that supports how we practice as herbalists as well. There's a few pieces of research that have been done, I guess, in the last 20 odd years, mainly at Westminster University, which have looked at kind of women's experience of being treated by herbalists, and kind of pragmatic randomized controlled trials, and using things like MIMOP to try and monitor outcomes. What would look your sort of ideal herbal research project look like, do you think? Just put you on the spot.
There's so many complications there, aren't there? Because how do you research herbal medicine? Well, there are two things. How do you, a herbalist looks at a person and treats the whole person. So therefore, you do actually have typically never a patient with fibroid being treated the same. And that makes it really quite hard to research. And then we use not one herb, we tend to use at least five or six herbs in the mixture. And then we shouldn't ignore all the lifestyle and the diet recommendations and we give as well. So I think the two things that I would be really interested in, and I know it's so difficult to get it done because I had a research funding to start at Middlesex University, and then I was allowed, as long as I got the research done within a year, I would get that funding. But the cost things takes much longer to get anywhere as well. And then I tried one time to do research with, which I thought was a very simple research, with lichen sclerosis, and I was working with people at a Whittington hospital. Some consultants were interesting to see what we are using, because they were having some of our patients coming back there. And they said, well, this should be easy to try. But then you get the pharmacist were objecting to it. How do you know it's safe? Blah, 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 blah. And it came to a halt. So what is a good research? Well, so one thing I suppose would be interesting, just in general, to see if you have a group of endometriosis patients being treated by herbalists compared to those that are not treated by herbalists, but conventional, would be interesting. But I do find the research that we have, as we talked about with Black Cowash, there's so much interesting information there that explain, and I find those research really helpful when I look at some of those individual herbs, what might a herb do when you look at it, perimenopausal woman? What does it do? What are the markers? Any blood test? Any urinary test? Any vaginal test? Any kind of, because now we have access to bone density. We have access to so many other tests that we can look at when people take something for a significant amount of time.
Yeah.
And so that's done with soya. So you look at the lipid factors, look at blood sugar. And then we find with all those herbs, actually with all those hormonal herbs, same with sage, with hops, they also have an effect on blood sugar. They also have an effect on the lipids. And so we get a little bit more of a package to see what's going on individual herbs. I think that is fascinating on the understanding the individual herbs. It's not how we practice, though, but I find that information very helpful to make me then decide, you know, when would I use sage? When would I use hops? Or when would I use, you know, when would you not use flaxseed? But anyway, that type of thing that I find it really fascinating to get that individual information there as well, which I feel should be relatively easy, you know.
It's just expensive, isn't it?
Yes.
Getting a load of people. And I think you're right, having different age groups as well, or women at different life stages, and how the herbs respond in different ways at different life stages would be really interesting. So we know that, for example, women who strength train when they're younger have a different outcome to women who strength train when they're older. Exeter University's done some really interesting exercise physiology research on that, looking at kind of mitochondrial activity and protein cells and how they change differentially at different ages. So it makes sense that herbs would be having different effects, and then also different formulations of herbs. You know, we use herbs in multiple different ways, whether that's capsules or tinctures or teas, and how do all of those different factors impact. So I guess we could try and build up a massive library of how different herbs and different formulations at different times impact. We can start to put it all together.
Yeah, and I suppose the interesting thing is now, you know, in my day, we had Wise as a book, and it was the textbook, the only textbook. But now we do have access to information worldwide, isn't it? Sort of studies published. A lot of them seem to be published at the moment in Iran, which is sort of interesting, sort of research coming out there. And we actually have access to that. So, I mean, it might feel we know very little is done, but somewhere it is also, I feel, well, actually quite a bit is done out there. You know, we might not always agree with the quality, or they might not necessarily say what part they used, or all these little things that are really annoying. Mm. But there is a lot more information out now compared to when I started initially off training as a herbalist.
Yeah, and lots of the journals are starting to make sure, the journals that are publishing herbal research are starting to make sure that things like exact species and concentration and ratio and the actual medicine that was used is recorded more accurately now. So hopefully that sort of thing will improve over time as well. But yeah, Iran's got a lot of research comes out of there. And then there will be a lot of research happening in China that doesn't necessarily get translated across.
Yeah.
They're doing lots of really interesting work using systems pharmacology and trying to use computer programs to map exactly what might be happening in a complex system, which more closely, you know, is more similar to the way we use herbs, with lots of different herbs, and each of those herbs having lots of different constituents and how they might all interact together in a complex system. But I find that quite hard to get my head around how that all happens, but there's some people
it's
who are doing it.
Fascinating, isn't it? Because the whole synergy and the herbs is already complex enough if you look at one individual herb, but let alone if you use more than one herb, isn't it? There's so many added benefits there that are so difficult to get a handle on because it's so complex.
Yeah, Yeah, and then, you know, you also have the impact of the therapeutic relationship and the herbalist practicing with the patient. You know, a herbal approach is successful due to the herb or the herbalist. Yeah. And it's got to be a bit of both, hasn't it? But
yeah, indeed.
Research, I think, can only add to the herb side of things.
Indeed, yeah.
So things like endometriosis and fibroids, they're kind of, you were mentioning earlier that there's sort of more research into fibroids. And do you think that the reason they're notoriously poorly treated by conventional medicine is just because they haven't been researched enough or taken seriously enough, or just because they're really complicated to treat?
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of politics and, you know, how women's health is being treated. There's a lot of many discriminated. I just used the example of cardiovascular incidents in women, how it presents very different than in men, but it took a long time to even discuss that aspect. So, yeah, I think it's very poorly researched. Endometriosis is a really complex one because you're usually, you know, it's getting usually diagnosed pretty late. It's, you know, people might be very disabled by the whole condition for many years, over 10 years, and have seen 3 different specialists before they actually get anywhere with a diagnosis. I would think women's health always was a little bit in the back seat before we got any further that. And then you have so many other politics. If you think about how did we find out about things and how slave women were used to do the horrendous research on. It's a bit of a minefield. And I'm sure that actually things are now getting better, that there's more interest and more research, perhaps more women getting into the field of gynecology and pushing it a bit more forward to research it better.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, I think that really helps. You know, I think historically women's pain and experiences were marginalised and not taken seriously at all. And I wonder if the focus that a herbalist has on the person and the way that we kind of really try to connect and listen to an individual experience might positively impact that and make it more likely that things like this would get heard, or women would be heard.
Yes.
And research can be done better.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Yeah.
One final question before we finish. How do you think women can empower themselves to have better health? We spoke earlier about the dangers of Google and online searching, but what are the best ways that women can support their own health?
There's sort of some general principles that is probably for everyone. Obviously, diet is incredibly important. And I find diet is an interesting one, thinking about the general health, because in many ways, diet is another form of herbal medicine. The foods are another form of herb, a bit more extended. So if we talk about flax seeds of soya, an extension of the herbs overlapping into what's happening in diet. Mm. And so nowadays we realize that the whole microbiome is so important with everything, which is the same with women's health. And specifically, it's fascinating when you look at the whole microbiome and the ability to absorb some of the isoflavones, which we find in soya, but obviously in other foods as well. And that there's a whole big variety of how much you can actually absorb depending on your microbiome, which is another aspect of research, isn't it? Because if you're going to just compare two people, one takes soya and the other one doesn't take soya, you still have to keep in mind some other things, because if they are vegetarian, if they eat a lot of plant-based foods, they are more likely to get more access to some of those healthy things in the foods. So I think nowadays we always start to say, well, you need at least have 30 different plant-based foods in your diet in the week. And that will have an impact on the microbiome. And that will also have directly a direct influence on how much goodness you absorb from the different foods. And that would, if you then sort of include things like the pulses, which are full of the sort of phytoestrogenic substances that can be beneficial before as well as after menopause, they get much better absorbed. So, you know, that's an interesting aspect to think about. So diet is really important. And then, of course, all the other things that interplay, we're not just talking about hormones, but if your mental health is so important to look after as well, if you are not looking after yourself, there's so many things, you know, stress or things just happen in life that really put you sideways. That can have a direct impact on your menstrual cycle. You know, nothing you're taking yet. It's just what is happening in life. Traveling will suddenly stop your cycles. So we know there's so many different things that impact without thinking about hormonal herbs yet, but just looking after one's health, making sure you take time out and having some reflective periods to look after your mental health is really important. Then obviously the other one is the exercise too. It's all these boring things that people said, oh, can I just take a tablet and I would feel much better? But it's to look after one's whole health. Those things are equally important. And we know about bone density, how important it is for later on in life. Or exercise is the best way. Again, you might take some herbs for it, but still exercise, weight-bearing exercises are very important. Then I think when we're looking at if one has a specific condition, I think it's really worthwhile going to see herbalist, because it's not just about, oh, I got endometriosis, let me Google that and see what herb comes along. No, there's so much more involved than, oh, that herb might well be appropriate, but that because of the complexity of the human body, we tend to sort of evaluate where the weaknesses are in the body and therefore want to correct those, which we then try to correct with herbs. I think as well as understanding, we talked about earlier research on different conditions, understanding the different conditions and then seeing the where a certain herb might be of benefit, but also having understanding the herb in a very different way than just thinking this herb is for endometriosis, because there's so much more around to it. We talked about endothelial health of the vasculature. We talked about the microbiome, the mental health, all those interplay. And I think if you are trying to treat yourself, that is really, really, really tough. But a herbalist will try to take that whole picture. That's why sit down with a herbalist for an hour to try and evaluate those things. And then by seeing a herbalist, they're more likely to push you into the right direction with the right and correct herbs. So you don't waste your herbs on money on a lot of supplements and whatever, but you get it more directed. And also the benefit then would be that you actually get the support, you get to follow up. And when you see you change something along, will be usually sort of one change in the herb to see how things are going along that way. So I think a combination of those ones.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really hard to be very objective about your own health, isn't it? It's hard to see what could be causing what's going on with you. And then it's also really hard to spot changes. I often have follow-up consultations with patients and they say, well, I don't think anything's changed, and we'll go through all what they're experiencing and I'll point out the differences from the last time I spoke to them. And they're, I didn't realise that. So, absolutely. It helps to have someone on the journey with you, guiding you.
So true, isn't it? We forget when we're healthy, we forget what it was like, what we did. And actually, totally. That's just human nature.
Yeah, that's absolutely very true. Good. Yeah. Well, some amazing advice. Thank you so much for today, Henanya. It's been really fascinating talking to you. Hopefully, we'll see you again soon.
Okay, well, good to speak to you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Herbcast from Herbal Reality. We hope today's conversation has planted a seed of inspiration and deepened your understanding of herbal medicine, even answered a question or two. Please do subscribe to Herbcast wherever you're listening to this right now, and you'll be sure to never miss an episode. If you've enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love you to give us a 5-star rating and share it with someone who'd enjoy it too. As they say, learn something, teach something. It really helps us to reach more people and spread the good herbal world. You can also use a podcast review to share your comments and feedback about Herbcast, or perhaps make a suggestion for a future episode. It's always great to hear your views. If you can't wait till the next episode, you'll find plenty more herbal insights and all the previous Herbcast episodes on our website, and of course on social media. All the links you need are in the episode show notes. Until next time, take care, and thanks again for joining us for another episode of Herbcast from Herbal Reality. Bye for now.